Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship.
And now we are on to our next presenter, Dominic Forth. He helps people get on TV. How do you do that?
Well, my story started really like 20 years ago. I've been in media for over 20 years here in the States and worked for just a number of stations across the US. So everywhere from Kansas City to Tampa Bay to San Francisco, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Denver, Colorado. And I feel very fortunate. I've worked with some exceptional media people and went into a consulting role where that then grew to over 40 TV stations across the US, everywhere, small markets like Medford, Oregon in between. And so I had these relationships and I didn't realize how valuable those relationships were until I had a friend who was trying to get booked on TV to promote a new book. And the book was about psychedelics. In fact, the title of the book was called Psychedelics for Everyone. And so you can imagine, the news producers.
Even for me? Yeah. Or especially for me.
Yeah. And so he couldn't get booked. And I said, well, let me explain, because this wasn't about taking, you know, magic mushrooms at music festivals. It was about like treating clinical anxiety.
I would still like some if you can.
And so. I had producers who I'm friends with, and I said, hey, I'm trying to get this story because it's going to really help veterans especially. And they're like, oh, is that what this is about? And so I went back and booked him on 3 shows, and he was like, this is amazing, you can do this. And I was like, well, yeah, I used to work with these people at this station, that station, and so forth. And so that was the beginning of the TV bookers. And, you know, it's just sort of grown from there. But the biggest thing I realized was people didn't want to get booked on TV. What they really wanted to do was share the story. And so there was so much more that we could do. And, you know, where I grew up near Liverpool, we're all big storytellers. You know, you think of like packed pubs in the winter, everybody's huddled around with pints, swapping stories, kind of back to naval traditions and things like that. And so I realized that I had to really go on this personal journey to help other people tell their stories. And so that's now why we work with so many podcasts around the country, radio shows, speaking events, you know, conferences, traditional PR as well. But it all comes back to what is a great story. That's what ultimately drives what we do, is helping people tell the stories and ultimately transform lives by telling that story.
So what is a great story?
Yeah, you know, the 3 things that we look for is, number one, it has to be audience-centric. You know, a lot of people like talking about themselves, but really what's in it for the audience? Because to be honest, audiences are quite selfish, as Ken, I'm sure you can testify. The second piece, though, is to make that more effective, it has to be emotionally engaging. So how do you activate someone so they go from sitting back on the couch to suddenly leaning in and paying attention? But the third piece, and this is the one that's missed the most often, and you nailed this at the top of the show, is you have to be authentic. And so in a world where attention's quite cheap, really, where clicks are cheap and things like that, having credibility and trust is priceless. And so that authenticity piece is so important. It's the first thing we work with clients on, is how do you come across authentically? And it's sometimes the hardest as well for a lot of people.
How do you help people overcome their fear of being on video? Because I have a video podcast studio, Richard and I have it. And I have people that want to start podcasts and they just hate themselves on video. And it's really hard to get over that hump of having people be on video. And this is a non-threatening atmosphere. It's like nobody else is up here when they're recording. What do you advise people for that?
Well, let's take your example. So like, what is it you don't like about, I'd just be curious, like, what is it you don't like when you see yourself on video?
I don't look nearly as put together as like some of the other people that I see. And I, you know, we all notice our tiny little imperfections. Like I have one friend who's absolutely gorgeous and she says, oh no, you filmed my wrong side. And she won't do it. I've kind of had to get over that because everything we do is video, right? So I just live with it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to convince other people that, hey, you look fine on video, you know?
Yeah, I often start at the root cause of the story itself. So what's the end goal? Is this story going to benefit you or does it benefit the audience? Because often there's a shift there when people realize that this is really going to benefit so many people. How you look becomes really secondary. because mm-hmm. the message is so important, is that you almost, I don't want to say have a duty or a responsibility, but think of all the people you can help by telling this story and the impact that you can have and the transformation that you can cause. The other piece is everyone's rooting for you. Your co-hosts, the audience, everybody wants you to be successful. And I think that's often a barrier for people where they feel that they're going to get into this environment. And, you know, like the old days, people start throwing rotten vegetables and fruit at them and things like that. Yeah. And it's the opposite. It's like everybody wants you to be successful. And the information you bring, even if you don't say everything flawlessly, or you miss, you have 5 points to talk through, but you only get through to three. The audience is so grateful for those three things that you did bring up. They're not thinking, oh, well, two things weren't said, because they have no idea of that. So right. that's the shift we often work with. And I know it's easier said than done.
Well, no, that's but it's not about you. It's about your audience. And that's exactly the same thing Ken said, too. So that's really great advice. I'm going to use that. Thank you.
Ken, maybe you have a question here in the sense that you work with professional performers. And so what are some of the things that they would also use to overcome some of those fears?
The biggest thing that I think performers do is they relentlessly perform. They are constantly in front of people to get better at it. I'm a big golfer. I have to hit thousands of golf balls in order to improve my golf game just a little bit. So for those people that are nervous about being on screen or on anything, I think it's just about trying to do it as much as possible. And my favorite thing to show people that are nervous about this is I always ask people, especially if they're internet savvy, like, who's the biggest like YouTuber that you know, or like biggest influencer that you know? And they'll mention someone. And the one that I love to talk about, because I think she built such an amazing brand and was one of the first, is this Bethany Moto, who is one of the first like YouTube makeup tutorial women. And what you do is you go onto their YouTube channel and scroll all the way down and all the way back to their very first video.
Yeah, that's a
and
scary
it's
thing.
Usually terrible. Like that's the fascinating thing to do. And you're like, what? How? And Bethany's is fascinating to watch because she's a teenager and she's stumbling a little bit. She's finding her place. She's a new artist. She's a new, like, she doesn't know what she's doing, but she started, she served the tennis ball. She turned her camera on, said, I'm going to talk about makeup. Then go 3 months ahead. She's a little better. And then 3 months ahead, and then 3 years ahead. And then look at her now. And it's like she got better. Why? She hit 1,000 golf balls. It's yeah. the same thing.
Yeah, to piggyback off that, I do feel that imposter syndrome is very, very real. And I also think fear can be a positive thing as well, because sometimes when you have that sense of fear and that imposter syndrome, it's really a sign of growth. It shows that you're moving into a new realm, or not realm almost, but new role to you know, try and explain it a bit better. And so I work a lot with clients on embracing that fear. And to Ken's point about repetition, I think Batman, to be honest, I was on a flight recently and Batman Begins was on the plane. And you talk about someone who embraces his fear, but how does Batman become, you know, ultimately who he does in that movie? Well, it's all the practice and the repetition with the monks. And there's parts in that movie where he's getting knocked down, he's getting beaten with sticks and all sorts. And yet, in the end, you know, by embracing his fear, we know how the story ends. He then goes on and fights fear itself and turns fear into other people. And so those nerves and those sort of that early fear that you feel is a positive thing. And it's just learning to embrace that, because it's a very special stage, especially when you're starting out, you know, on TV for the first time.
Yeah, I want to shift gears a little bit here. One thing I want to point out is that in today's world, in 2026, thought leadership and trust and third-party validation are hugely important for showing up in Google search and AI searching. And this is a way to establish that, a very good way to establish that. But how do you guarantee 100% placement for people on TV? Like, how do you actually get them on there?
So there's two parts to this. So one is we don't take clients on who aren't going to be able to be booked. That's the first piece. We have to shoot people very realistically. If they're controversial or political, we don't take political clients. We try and avoid the political sides of things. So that's the first. The second is personal relationships. And so quite often a client will come to us and we'll say, hey, give us 7 days. I just need to feel this out with some of our client, some of our contacts to see if this is a fit or not. And what will happen is often we'll bring a client forward that wants to talk about a certain topic. And a producer will say, that's a great topic. I've got two teenage boys, back to school's coming up. I think this would work, but would they be willing to tweak the messaging slightly? Because then we can feature them on this. And then I'll go back to the client and say, is this aligned enough? And that's how we'll get them booked. So it's very heavy on the personal relationships, but it's also, and this was hard for me at first because I'm a big yes person, really shooting people straight and not taking on clients who aren't a good fit and being honest with them and saying, I'm really sorry that our agency can't take you on. Here's some other options that you can, you know, pursue instead.
In terms of types of TV shows, are you focused mostly on morning shows or do you work on business shows? Are there particular markets that you work with? Are you looking mostly at local TV versus national TV?
I'm a huge proponent for local TV. And it's funny because clients come to us and they say, I want to be on Good Morning America. I want to be on, you know, Fox News or CNN. And they've never had TV experience before. So I'm like, that's great. So does everybody else. Let's be practical on this and pragmatic. So local news is really powerful because you have a very loyal audience, especially in the mornings, especially for healthcare professionals. A lot of shows have it mandated by the producers that they need at least one medical segment per each hour programming quite often. So we're able to put our medical contributors on in, you know, major markets like Washington, D.C. In New York, we work with like Pix 11, for example. And then the goal is, and again, this goes back to Ken's point about repetition, getting those 1,000 reps in. You have to really practice to get to that national level, unless it's a very unusual story. And people have just gone straight international, don't get me wrong. But for consistent thought leadership, there are, you know, a lot of tweaks that we have to make with messaging and with delivery. But yet we've placed clients on like Bloomberg, Fox News, the CNNs of the world. We've done that. But I would say for anyone listening to this that wants to be on TV, do not diminish the power of local news, because you could get 5 or 6 appearances or even weekly contributor roles on a local affiliate and get tons of reps in versus the person that stands back and says, I'm only doing national. It could be 12 months. It could be 18 months. And meanwhile, the person that's done local now has 25 or even 52 appearances over that time.
Do you feel like somebody who's been on podcasts or hosted podcasts or has a YouTube channel has an advantage over someone who doesn't when it comes to this?
I definitely do. And I would also really add how powerful podcasts are. In fact, in some ways, podcasts are more powerful and more persuasive, because you might wait for the call to have, you know, a 2.5 minute interview on, let's say, a top 10 regional affiliate. Now, your part of that might be 45 seconds. Yes, it's a lot of credibility. You've been called as the expert on that topic. But when you think of the average consumer or person at home with a podcast, you're with them for 30 to 45 minutes. And it might be one-on-one. You might be with them in the car, when they're cooking dinner, when they're at the gym, riding the bike. So podcasts are really, really powerful because you have that intimate relationship building. And I honestly feel that will nurture a sale further forward a lot faster than waiting for news hits on breaking news cycles where you might get the call to be an expert.
So how do you see media changing now, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years? Is television still going to have the credibility strength that it has in the past? Or are social channels like YouTube and podcasting going to be even stronger and predominate?
Yeah, so it's interesting how AI, especially geo, you know, as we mentioned earlier, how it pulls from different sources, that has really helped the power of being featured on TV. Because it was kind of declining for some time, I think, just general sort of, and this is just my opinion. But now that people are seeing being featured on a major news network really does help with your AI, you know, with the LLMs and everything. But I do feel that the true power of a strong message is really recognized on YouTube. And I think if you have a strong podcasting strategy where if you're guesting on podcasts a lot, I would recommend for business owners to host podcasts. I think it's really, really powerful. It opens a lot of doors, a lot of business relationships. and then having your own YouTube channel, because there's so much audience. I mean, that's where the audience really is now. If you want large number of impressions, just to give you an example, we had a client that they had a video from the New York Stock Exchange that got posted last night at 7 p.m. By this morning, we already had 6,000 views on it. And that's only going to compound over time. Now, yes, a local TV placement might have 20 to 40,000, maybe larger, but YouTube for compounding, brand building, and especially for customer acquisition, I just don't see anything that can really stop the growth of YouTube. I just think it's so powerful.
Plus, it's evergreen, right? And it's searchable. If you're on a television program, you've got your time there, but it's different if you're on YouTube and people can find you over and over again.
Yeah, and I don't want to diminish the power of TV because it is extremely credible. Obviously, you've had journalists with decades of experience who have vetted you, they featured you, but it's hard to get those clips sometimes. And sometimes it will take us 7 days just to get the digitalized version of that interview. Whereas being a guest on a podcast, there's so many positives to being on a podcast because now you have this evergreen asset. It can be edited into clips that could be 12 months of content throughout the year. You've got all the SEO backlinks, and you still have the third-party endorsement of the host as well. So I think it does all work together, but I am seeing a shift. And I'd be curious from everyone else's experience as well. But the shift for me is just the digital platforms, and especially when you own the platform, if you own your own podcasting platform, you own your own mailing list, your newsletter list, it's just that's really where the growth is.
Well, I do have to say all the research I'm doing, and I do research on podcasting and discoverability and AI discoverability, YouTube always comes up as one of the top things you have to do. And you have to do YouTube shorts, and then you can send people to your longer content. It likes both. But YouTube is the main discoverability engine for a lot of content for people. And when I researched for a presentation I gave in January, it said the one thing podcasters can do in 2026 is put their content on YouTube as a YouTube podcast. So I tell everybody, start with YouTube, like, and then pull out the audio and put it as a podcast. But I think TV is still pretty powerful, but like you said, it's a little harder to do.
We've had clients who have just about to be on air on like News Nation, and then suddenly there's a press conference from the president that gets announced, yeah, and they've been on hold for 40 minutes waiting to speak, and their segment gets canceled. It never gets rebooked again. Yeah. And then they come to us like, well, what was that about? I'm like, we're sorry, we have no control. And so you have to have the right type of CEO mindset, where a lot of CEOs, they're used to being the top dog. And so they call the shots, it's on their schedule. The media and the major networks, they don't care. If you want to be featured, you have to be ready at 3:30 p.m. You'll go on at 3:30, 6 p.m. And if there's a press conference, you'll get bumped. And they'll move on to the next person if you're upset about it. So again, I don't want to come across like being negative about TV. It's very, very powerful, but there are some realities there. Whereas with podcasting, you get 40 minutes with an audience, sometimes even longer. YouTube, you have this content that keeps growing and compounding over time.
Dominic Forth, he helps people get on TV. How do people find you? And I know you help people get on TV. You help them start podcasts. You help prepare them emotionally, sounds like. How do people find you if they need these services?
Yep. So if you have a story to tell and want to make an impact, you can find me personally on LinkedIn, Dominic Forth, and you can connect with our team at thoughtleadersamerica.com. That's thoughtleadersamerica.com.